Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana.
All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a podcaster. I am a COVID dodger. I am a mask wearer. That's going to be a constant one on these openings. Most importantly, though, crazy how I still am. But most importantly, I am a professional wrestler, and I am sitting here live in my studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before we go any further, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every other Thursday for the next 6 weeks. ColtCabana.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast from. A couple great ways that you can support: rate, review on iTunes, tell a friend, tweet it out, coltmerch.com, digitalcolt.com. I do have micro brawlers up. I do have brand new pins up. I have a lot of new merch since the last series of podcasts. And the new best way that you can support, patreon.com/coltcabana. That's where you can listen to all the past archives ad-free and so many more goodies, including video of me doing this podcast right now. ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, Patreon.com/ColtCabana. Also, don't forget about Twitch. I am now a Twitch star. My boss lets me do Twitch. I don't hate that. Well, let's get into it. I guess we'll start with Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy is the guest this week. Great way to start off the very first podcast of this series. If you're new, after 10 years, if you're new, what I do, for the most part, there's been some dips in there. I've been sitting down with my friends, people that I am friends with in the world of professional wrestling, in person, and we talk about struggles, mainly. The struggles to get where we got to why we are here. And that's what makes this a life podcast. Matt Hardy has been somebody that I've wanted to have on the show for years. Somebody who I've asked to have on the shows. I had his brother on, Jeff Hardy, and he opened up and was great. Matt Hardy does the same thing at the very end. He talks about how we hit some stuff that we had never hit before. But for me, it is not about getting the scoops, getting the gossip, getting the juice. It's about having a real talk, and that's what we did. Now, this was done before the match with Sammy Guevara on All Out. And as we speak, Matt's good. I saw him the other week at TV. I mean, he's good from an outside perspective. We don't know what's going on in that brain. And while I was with the NWA, Chris Nowinski came in and talked to us and basically said, "We'll never know what's going on with any of your brains until you die and we dissect it." And I was like, "Wait, you can't do studies?" He's like, "No." Then I'm like, "How do I know that my brain isn't the most hurt right now? I mean, I'm not in the safest job." And he's just like, "Don't get 2 concussions in a row. If your head hurts, don't wrestle." And I was like, "Oh, I feel I need more concrete information." And we don't have that. It's not like AEW doesn't have that, or WWE or Impact. Like, nobody does. And I thought listening to Chris Nowinski's speech would make me feel safer and happier. And it like did the complete opposite, made me so worried in general for everyone. So, of course, when this stuff happens with Matt Hardy, that's all I could think of. That's what a lot of people could think of. And there's a lot of hindsight. And I don't have so much talk about the politicalness of it. Maybe leave that to Matt's wife, and good for her. But hindsight, I was talking to the Young Bucks about it, and Matt and Nick were so scared as it happened, and so is the wrestling community. And Matt Hardy comes from a different time in wrestling, as I do a little bit myself. And at one point, I said to the Young Bucks, like, "You're the EVPs. Please don't not think about running out there and just stopping yourself. You're allowed to do that." And what I love is that back in the day, let's use the wrestling terms, you would get heat if you stopped the match. But nowadays, we have finally, for the right reasons, we have twisted the minds of the consumer and the watcher that essentially they got heat for continuing the match. And that is the right thing. The only time, it's hard as a performer to be like, we have this thing, we must finish it. I could see if you were the main event of a pay-per-view and it's all sold based off of you wanting to push forward. I know that's not the correct answer. And I know as a promoter, it would be hard to be like, I don't know what to tell you. They got hurt. But Matt and Sammy were in the middle of the card. Not that it's excusable, but as performers, it's great that we can think to ourselves, hey, we're not the main event. We're not safe. We can go home. And I can't speak for Matt, but I'm sure Matt had that old school mindset and like his brain was scrambled. So it's like whatever that old school mindset was automatically set to said, we got to finish this match. And the more and more that the watcher and the fan tells us wrestlers, don't, we won't be mad. The more our mindsets as wrestlers will change. And that is only for the good. All right. Done with that subject. Let's talk about the new series. I've been going to AEW down to Daly's Place for the past almost probably 4 months now. So I had the opportunity to sit down with a lot of the friends. This was all post-COVID testing and I wiped down all the microphones and we sat pretty far apart. So I was keeping it safe. I was doing my part in a world where everyone is now doing podcasts with Zoom or Google Hangouts. I wanted to stick true to my colors of doing live in-person podcasts. And that's what we did, all with AEW performers. And of course, you can watch AEW every single Wednesday night on TNT, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Also, check out AEW Dark on the AEW YouTube channel. Just this week, I wrestled QT Marshall in a very fun match. So essentially, this whole thing is to promote AEW through the wrestlers and through my podcasting with the wrestlers and myself. I'm also a wrestler on AEW. With that being said, I do have a lot of stuff to talk about. Masks, pro, COVID, con. But I guess we have five other shows to get into that. And right now, I guess there's an excitement in the air about starting this podcast, talking to Matt Hardy, getting back to these fun conversations that I've loved doing. I will tell you this. If you want to watch the video of this podcast, head on over to my Patreon. That's where you can find all the past archives, ad-free, and videos of all of these podcasts in this series. This is exciting. We're starting the new season, and we're starting it with a legend. Honestly, literally, the legend of professional wrestling. He'll probably hate when he hears that, but too bad, Matt. You're a legend, and I'm going to talk to you right now in a Hyatt in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, good. So this is a long time coming, I feel, for me. We weren't allowed to podcast at one point because you were so entrenched,
yeah,
in your character, which you still are.
Yeah, deep, but I had to be committed to try and make it work, right? You know, and especially in the beginning, that was very, very committed to doing Broken Matt Hardy the first time around.
Yeah,
and everything was full fledged in deal, and now I feel like that I'm here and I'm doing different personas and I can kind of go in and out of different characters I've done in the past. It's good too, because I can have different layers of, like, I can be like over the top ridiculous, or I can be serious and like cut a real promo if I have to or whatever. So
dude, when you, so like, I mean, there was a time where I was pretty good at the merch stand or whatever, you know, like you judge, that's how you do it. You judge by the lines, right?
Yeah. You're being very modest there.
Well, I mean, there was a time that I was doing pretty good. And then there was a time where I saw the Bucks explosion of like,
right,
and then your thing hit, and you know, if you weren't right next to the Bucks or whatever, you know, it was pretty awesome. And I only say that because obviously in the late '90s, early 2000s, like I was this like super run of whatever it was. But I don't know if you do you compare them, because like in my head, the fucking, when I watch like those people fucking on the indie shows go to you, like, do you rate like whether like what was the biggest run or the most impact you had, like, as a wrestler?
No,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, but I really don't think I think about it in those terms. In reality, I feel like I just think about it more about like just wanting to like have a good career and always do things that are like different or fresh or like constantly change and evolve. Especially since, like, you know, a big start, really, my motivation to start doing that, I think originally, was whenever Jeff and I were first together, and when we were hot as the Hardy Boys in Team Extreme, and you know, that was like we were adrenaline junkies, guys that were fearless or whatever. That was more Jeff than me, you know. And I know that was probably one of the things, even with Vince, it kind of had to make up his mind, like, well, I think this Jeff is the guy in this team, you know, like he was the number one, because that really suited Jeff, because Jeff is crazy, and he was happy doing that, but I like doing character stuff. And when I finally got the opportunity to split away from Jeff, and I did, you know, Matt Hardy version one, the Sensei of Mattitude, and I was like this over-the-top, delusional character that was full of himself with a little shit-eating grin who thought he was the best thing since sliced bread. I mean, from that point on, I always made it a goal of mine to, like, always try and change and stay fresh. You know, that's how you
stay relevant. Why would you want to change in the middle of that? It was so, I'm just saying, like, I realize you have to change, but, like,
yeah,
you know, like, I just remember being, like, in the peak of that, I think, like, those hard House of Hardcore days and, you know, I think the, like, that wrestle circus we did South by Southwest. I think we wrestled.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, the fucking, you were at the peak of it.
Yeah. I mean, and that was broken, Matt. I mean, and I would have continued that out longer, I guess, if, you know, when I went back to WWE because of, like, some of the trademarks and the battles we had with Impact, you know, and they wanted us to come back originally as the Hardy Boys because that was Vince's creation. You know, and I always knew I was going to be rolling the dice if I went back there to do Broken Matt, some version of Broken Matt.
No way Vince knew anything about Broken Matt, right?
Well, one of the funniest things was, like, one day out of the blue, they did a thing where my brother was hurt and I was going to have a little bit of a losing streak, and it was going to lead to having a new persona. And I'd given him something all new that was totally different. But then, like, one day, Bray came up to me and said, "Hey, man, did you hear about what we're doing?" I said, "What do you mean what we're doing?" This is just, like, right when I'm pulling up TV. He said, "You're going to end up, we have a match tonight, and then, like, you snap, and then you end up going full Broken after this, and, like, we're going to have, like, you know, Bray Wyatt versus Broken Matt Hardy or whatever it is." And I remember going to Michael. He said, "Hey, did you hear about what you got to do with Vince?" And I was like, "No." He says, "Vince needs 30 minutes with you. He wants you to explain the whole Broken Matt Hardy process to him and everything else." One of the most amazing conversations I've ever heard.
Interesting.
No doubt. You know, and I sit down with Vince, and I literally take him, like, through my process of how I created this and, like, the origins and the history of the character and how things happen, and trying to get him to understand. There was just a lot of times where it's like, And he's looking at me, and I don't want to say, he's like, "What in the fuck is he talking about?"
You've probably seen that face and demeanor, like, a million times, right?
Yeah, I mean, this one was like, because, like, this is something he, you know, he's like, "Let's just go with this, because these fans keep saying delete, and this thing won't die, so obviously people must like it. Like, this is why we hire these fuckers back.
Right.
You know, they must like it to some degree, so, like, let's give it a shot."
Is he like, "And that made money?"
No, he never got to that. I remember one of the funniest things, I said, you know, like, and my deal is, like, with Broken Matt, I said I was inspired to do it all because of True Blood. Like, I loved how you would see Eric Northman, who was the coolest vampire on the show, how he would live, like, through these different time eras. And, you know, he was, like, dressing in the era, if it was in the 1800s or the 1500s or whenever it was, you know, like, throughout time. And I thought that was so cool. I was like, how could you do that with a wrestling character and relate it? And I was like, well, what if something happens to me and I say that I have broke open the limits of my mind. My mind has been broken as far as the limits of it being a normal mortal mind. And I am cognizant of where my soul or essence has been throughout eternity, you know, the whole while. And I said, in that way, I could say that I was in other bodies. You know, this, now I've just happened to be housed and dwell inside the body of this professional wrestler, Matt Hardy. That's the deal. And that was the whole mindset behind it. I remember telling him, he's like, I said, and, like, I understand it through all space and time. He said, "Where would you do promos? Maybe in a planetarium?"
Yes.
You know, which was so funny just because that's in space.
At NASA? Would we go to NASA?
But instead, I just got, like, a wrinkled white curtain with a light blue light on it that my wife got so upset about.
Dude, that was such a roll of the dice, right? Or was it not? Or are you full commitment?
When I first did it?
Yeah.
I mean, I was committed. And, I mean, I had it planned to go a couple ways. I mean, either one, like, people buy into it and they play along. And, like, the audience I was dealing with Impact Wrestling was very smart at that time. So I think a lot of casual mainstream people jumped on because they're like, oh my God, Matt's back on grapes again. He's like, you know, he's messed up. You know, Carl Anderson said, I didn't know if you, like, lost your mind or if it was crazy, because I was so committed. Every interview I did was in gimmick. And we talked about it. I wouldn't do anything without it. I was so committed to it because I said, I think this will work. I said, then, like, worst case scenario, if they don't bite in on this, then I'll end up just being this crazy, you know, I'll make it normal, but crazy. Like, I'm out of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
but people bit into what I was doing, and they kind of like almost winked at me and played along with it, and it worked, and it got over.
Yeah, fuck, I forgot about the grapes thing. but maybe we'll get into something like that. Okay, I kind of always just start from the beginning. I know, you know, it's you and your brother growing up.
Right.
I guess I'd like to. God, it's all so well documented. That's the shitty.
Yeah.
What haven't you said? So it's you and your brother. Was there
just two of us? Yeah.
Okay.
Just him. And
what'd your parents do again?
Our mom died when we were both really young. She had cancer, and then
how young were you when you know?
We were 9 and 11. Okay. And then our dad was a farmer, and he worked as a part time employee of the U.S. Postal Service. He was a mailman.
Okay.
You know, had a route, but he only worked every 2 weeks or whatever. But that is like how we had benefits and insurance. So that was like a big deal. What? So he had benefits and insurance on us because we were very, very poor, you know. And
very poor.
Very poor, yeah. He was a farmer, you know, a tobacco farmer. That's what he did. That's where the majority of his income. And we worked on the farm like since, you know, we were 4 or 5, you know, the age of like my youngest kids. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of all we knew. And then eventually guys retired and he got a full-time job, and then he was a little bit better off. But still, he was also like, as far as a father, he was very like, our mother was like the motherly, like, I love you and I care about you. And our dad was very like old school Southern man, like get up at sunrise to work and then, you know, go to bed late at night. I don't say I love you. I don't hug you. No affection or emotion really about it. Just very like man, mm-hmm. you know, kind of that old mentality, just kind of how he was brought up and raised, I think. So, you know, that was one of those things too. I think we missed out on a lot of that from an emotional stance. And I think that's something that eventually probably caught up to both Jeff and I, you know, later on in life, just because we never had like emotional nurturing in many ways.
What do you mean they caught up for you?
I just even think too, like once we started wrestling, you know, and then like both getting hurt and pain and injuries, and like if we did take pills, it was just like, you know, we just did. It's like, fuck it, who cares? You know, like whenever we went down dark paths, mm-hmm. and I think with me, after I finished my stuff and I got on the other side, and I was thinking about getting married, having kids, I'm like, well, fuck, there's so much more to life than this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and I just like learned so many. Like having kids, like, is the ultimate. To me, the ultimate education is like understanding what's important in life.
And I mean, I'm not with you at home, but I'm assuming there's a lot of I love you and...
Oh, nonstop. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell my kids that enough. I mean, right. I'll be heartbroken when they don't want to kiss me and cuddle yeah. with me and love me. Like, I can't... I love them so much, it's crazy. I'm sure they think I'm like, God, stop loving us so much, Dad.
Is your dad still here?
He is, yeah. Right. My dad is still around.
And is he in the picture?
He he's around. He was in a nursing home for a while. Okay. And my brother was out, and I'll give my brother amazing propers because he was out having surgery, and like I was working on the road with WWE full time. But my brother like was with him for those 7 or 8 months, and he ended up getting him back home, and he's at home and just kind of hangs there, and he's just around the house, but he's okay to like yeah. manage it, you know, manage himself.
Did you have anybody else helping raise you guys?
No.
It was just there no cousins or uncles or aunts
no.
or nothing.
No, we didn't have any immediate family yeah. real close to us.
Wow. I was kind of curious if there was cousin Hardys running around that we don't know about.
Not close. We have a few cousins, but they're further away.
Yeah. And then wrestling is just on TV and you just find it and you're addicted. Did Dad like wrestling at all?
Yeah. I mean, our dad was his thing. We would wrestle in our backyard. We like begged one time, like later after he got a full time job being a mailman. Look, all we want for Christmas is this trampoline. Like if you buy us a trampoline, then we can wrestle on it and we'll build it into a wrestling ring, whatever. We just want this trampoline. That's all we want. Please give us a trampoline. And then we would wrestle in our backyard and we would like save up money for a month and we would rent like a video camcorder. It was $25.
Yeah.
And then we would spend the weekend that we had it rented like recording matches and shows of our promotion, and we'd play a whole bunch of different characters and maybe have a friend over too.
How would you save the money? You working?
Yeah, just from working with him, like with him,
either on the farm.
Doing the farm, and then we started raking pine straw too. That was like we have the Hardy compound's like a real thing. You know?
Okay.
We have like 100 acres of land, and it, a lot we have longleaf pine straw. Like literally, you can sell that where we live. It's like in high demand. Like there's people who buy pine straw everywhere. Like we would take the truck and we had like a frame on it, and we would like fill it up with pine straw. And we would take it and make $100. You know, like spend the day, load up the truck, gotcha. And then take it and sell it, and then we'd bail it.
And then build that fucking trampoline into a ring.
Build that trampoline into a ring. That was our dream, man.
Did you have a plan or? What are you putting poles around?
Yeah, we went out and cut trees and skinned them. like off the land. Okay. It was like built off the land. We had like old garden hoses that like had holes in them that we were gonna throw away, mm-hmm. and we put cable through them. I mean, we had like a lot of the resources there, like from that standpoint. But like, even once we did this, and then we met a guy who was a carny. His name was Kenneth Morgan. We called him the Woolly Booger because of the way he looked. He had this big ass beard, had a funny squeaky voice, and at this time we were friends with. When we first met this guy, friends with Shannon Moore, yeah. and we met Marty Garner Champagne, the iconic Champagne, and then Jason Arndt, who was Joy Abs for a short run in WWE. And then like this guy said, like I'd build a ring, it's 20 by 20, and inside it has like a 12, it was 4 and 4, yeah, it was 12 by 20, a trampoline on the inside he had, like a rectangular trampoline. He said, and then on the outside it's hard, you know, you can bounce off the thing and jump onto this, it's going to be a real innovative, and he had a voice like this, I think it's going to be a real innovative concept, Matthew, I think you're going to like it, you and your brother out there, you jump on that trampoline, do them big flips, and you land on the hard part, people ain't going to know what to think. You know, I worked with the fair business for 20 years, I can get bookings at all the fairs in North Carolina.
Where'd you find this guy?
A friend of ours, Trevor Lee's father. You probably met Trevor Lee.
Yeah.
Trevor Lee's father is Tracy Goodell, and he is the guy that he came over and he was wrestling on our trampoline with us. He was like 6 or 7 years older than us, but he just loved wrestling. Right, mm-hmm. He was a big bodybuilder guy. I love that stuff. And then
it's still super weird if he was 18 and you were 12 and he's a bodybuilder guy and wrestling with you guys. Like, I know that's not what it was.
We were older at that point.
Okay.
By the time we're bouncing around, I mean, we were like 15, 16.
Okay. All right.
Then he was, it was a little weird at the time, but he was so passionate about it. And we knew him growing up because like,
he's the guy that would buy you beers.
We didn't drink. We were right till this wrestling business fucked us up. He went to school. He was like grades ahead of us in school. He was 6 years older, I want to say. And then he drove a Coke truck and like filled machines. That's what he did. He was like a vendor or whatever. And he met this guy on one of his Coke routes, you know. And then like we went to this guy's house and we saw his ring. And then like we did a couple shows at these fairs, and then this guy realized he wasn't going to make any money doing it, so he's like, I don't know if it's going to be profitable, it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Isn't it funny how you've been in the wrestling business for so long and we're around wrestlers all the time, but I'm sure you can go back in your head and be like, we know a guy who is kind of in the wrestling industry, right? Like, don't you found out about this guy?
Yeah.
The excitement of knowing somebody in the wrestling industry.
For sure. And then we bought this guy's ring for $600, and that became our first ring. And then we converted it over to a regular ring, and it was terrible. It took like 8 hours to set up. It was such a disaster.
Was it not the most innovative thing, this middle...
The trampoline in the middle.
Springboard pad thing?
No. There's some footage. There's some very famous footage out there. You can see it's on a lot of the WWE DVDs and made it.
Oh, I feel like you should break it out for a match.
Maybe.
I feel the Bucks would thrive in this.
Oh, yeah, right. Maybe like that I debuted Surge tonight, my old shitty indie gimmick, and I was with the Bucks.
Have you ever seen that thing, that like old like 50s French footage where the guy, like they step on the thing and they spring into the ring? Have you ever seen that one?
I have,
I feel that's like... That was innovative.
Oh, I mean, you could definitely certainly do something in this day and age with what we can get away with.
Yeah. And so he started putting you on the shows, and you guys built your own thing, and you were filming at a young age. When you were filming stuff, like in your head, were you like picturing like these are going to be on our DVDs when we're older?
No, not really. No. Well, the stuff we filmed in our backyard, which was so crazy when we'd rent the video camera, even before we met Kenneth, I mean, like, I would take two VCRs and I would cut these things together, and we went to the video stores locally and we sold them. I don't even know really if we sold them. Maybe we sold them at the shows, but like we would ask them if they would rent them out. Maybe they'd give us $5 or $10 or whatever, but then they would just have these things, they'd rent them out, and we made little covers and wraps around the box, and we had these VHS tapes of our stupid little backyard shows in video stores all over Moore County.
And did you ever get money for those?
I mean, that's thinking back, I feel like they gave us like $5 or $10.
Because it was the cute little kids? Do you think anyone ever?
Yeah.
I mean,
a charity payout more than anything else.
What is it? Was it Moore, North Carolina? Is that what you said?
Moore County. That was the name of Moore County.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, does everybody know who you guys are now in Moore County? Is that how that works?
Yeah. Sorry, We're pretty well known in that area. Actually, to the point, like, most people just like don't really give a shit. It's just, there they are.
Were you guys known Like, were you when you were teenagers, were you like, those are the teenage kids that are doing the wrestling? Like, not even before you were famous?
No. No one would have noticed then. I mean, there were like, we would do shows like when we were running what became Omega originally, like start off as ECWF, East Coast Wrestling Federation, like do shows. And we had three different towns we'd run, like Southern Pines and Sanford. And we'd run these every so often. But we had a little following that people would come out and we would draw a couple hundred people. I mean, yeah. We'd bust our ass to try and promote and work these shows. And we kind of built up a following as that goes. But like, as far as like people going like, oh my God, those are the hot, cool wrestlers. They're going to be a big deal one day. No, we didn't have any of that.
Was there a moment where you felt it in your own town?
That we were a big deal?
Yeah.
Not until after WWE and like experienced success there. Because one thing that was funny, you're talking about how my dad reacted to stuff. Like, we would do this and we would go up to WWE and do jobs. You know, like starting the first time we ever went was in 94. And then, like, I remember our dad would say, look, you two need to, like, take the civil service test and get your job as a mailman. I hate to break it to you, but that wrestling shit, it's fake. It's phony. It was like, yeah, no shit, eh?
Right.
We do it. We actually know exactly what it is. Like, he's telling, like, we're doing something different than what we see on TV or whatever. Yeah. You know, he was getting so frustrated. But the cool thing was, like, once we did make it, he, like, became our biggest fan, nice. You know? And he would buy all of our magazines, and he would come to shows, and he was, like, hot shit, and he would try and capitalize on anybody who knew who the Hardy Boys were. And he's like, I'm the Hardy Boys, Daddy. And he had these rats following him around. Just such a trip, man.
He decided you were going to be mailman.
That was his advice. That's what he was advising us to do.
And was a little bit of you like, oh, maybe I should have some kind of nothing?
No.
Never a backup plan either?
No. I mean, I was going to school for engineering.
Okay.
I went to college for my first year at UNC Charlotte for starting on civil engineering.
Were you in the dorms and stuff?
I completed that. Yeah.
Okay.
And I would leave the majority, because I worked on the weekends for wrestling. I would leave and go wrestle. I would come back home and wrestle. It's very, very rare that I didn't leave a weekend during college, so I didn't experience
it. I was the same way.
And then before I went back for my second year, our dad had a brain aneurysm. And then I literally dropped out of that to make sure he was okay, because Jeff was still in high school at that point. And then he started being okay, and the school year had already started at UNC Charlotte. So then I ended up going to a community college nearest with Sandhills, and I was going to still work on finishing my associate's degree. And I kind of finished that up, and then I was kind of like, I don't know, wrestling's going pretty good for us right now. We were like making a little bit of money, and we're booked all the time. And WWE kind of like dangled the carrot in front of us, like, well, if you guys, you're really good guys. You keep coming around. We think something's going to happen. You know, and then eventually, you know, it did down the road, fortunately, but I kind of just dropped out of college.
What was the weird dream of engineering? Just that sounds like a good job. Or?
No, well, I'm strong in math.
Okay,
and I liked building shit, and that's where it kind of came to be.
You built your ring, I guess, or
real poor job on that, the bad engineering job, but like, yeah, I mean, I just.
Like, what were you saying to yourself? Like, oh, I guess I'll work at the mill making the thing.
No, I mean, I was going to like be someone who was like overseeing people building bridges and shit, like, you know, and it would have been like a good paying job, I guess. But like, there was just so much math involved, and like, I'm just so much better. Like, my mathematical skill set is much better than my verbal skill set, I would say.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
So you were doing your own stuff, Omega, and I feel like I would see. God, did I see you guys like ECWA Independence?
Yeah.
Did you eventually get and Super PCW, AIDS. Right?
Yeah.
Blaine DeSantis?
Do I remember that name correctly? I feel PCW. That sounds familiar.
Those were the two hot ones, ECWA and PCW.
We definitely, in ECWA is the one that had the Super 8, right?
Yeah.
We 100% did that.
Were you in the Super 8?
Yeah. I did a couple of those. I remember like, we were so upset. Because we grew up big wrestling fans, you know, PWI, they would have the rankings like fucking Reckless Youth always on Devon Storm and Ace Darling. They were always in there, and we could never get in there, you know, because they knew the people, brother. They had the connection, you know, like we were just in a bad area. And that's actually one of the reasons we first started venturing up to like working for Dan McDevitt, you know, like at MCW, we did that. And even going up further to New York in that area, like we want to get some press, but like we could never get any down there, which was so funny.
Were you driving those?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Who is your connection, and why, you know, why did they decide to say yes to a car in North Carolina? Or were you guys doing well as enhancement guys?
We're well known as enhancement guys, but Omega was like creating a lot of us, like tape traders and stuff like that. Like it was, I mean, we kind of had the type of show that was almost as crazy as it sounds, like before Ring of Honor started doing mm-hmm. that shit, or like even what AEW is doing now. Like, we literally said, like, go out, I don't give a shit about building. Whenever we worked, the person who gave us the introduction to WWE and worked on shows was the Italian Stallion and George South. And I know you know them well.
Fuck yeah.
So whenever we do their show, you know, they would have their opening show, opening match, standard, just stay in the ring, do your thing, blah, 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 and build in the main event. They'll do all the gimmicks or whatever. And we knew how the structure of the shows were because we had to do all of their shows for free mm-hmm. or a hot dog to go to WWE and make $150 where they would take $100 for a booking fee every night. But like, you know, we would just do our show. I was like, man, you guys go crazy. Every match trying to steal the show. You guys do whatever. And we would, you know, try and get tables and chairs, and ECW was starting to be cool, you know. And we had a lot of buzz on Omega.
What was the, I don't want to say anarchy, but the, you know, what did you have against the first match? Nobody, you know, no pins or one pin. Did you have something against the idea that you did say everybody go crazy and you didn't want to follow that structure?
Yeah, I mean, I just think we were probably like how the Bucks felt when they got in the business before, like just boring, you know, right. Just like, you know, just go out. Like, if everybody's good and everybody can go, fuck, let everybody go. To hell with a hierarchy.
Right. And then how did you on purposely cultivate the buzz for Omega? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean we were just...
Did you have a guy who knew how to get the tapes out to people?
No. I mean, we had a guy, Ted Hopgood, that did our commentary, who was like in on all that stuff. He was like in on the boards right. in Japan. And he did a lot. He was like our commentary guy. And we met him, right? He came to our first show. And then we interacted. And he was like... He knew stuff and everything else. And he was real good at publicizing stuff. Yeah. So he probably helped out with that a lot, too.
Like I had like Dave Prazak. I don't know if you've heard
okay,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave
yeah.
was great at like...
Yeah.
So very instrumental to getting...
Yeah.
Sending that out. And he was on Prodigy, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
Were you on that stuff as a kid? Prodigy, AOL?
No, fuck, man, I had dial.
You didn't even have the internet.
We didn't. Fuck. I mean, we didn't have the internet. I mean, I didn't get the internet until like I moved into my house, and that was like after I was at WWE. And still, for the longest time, like fuck, still now, even at my house, because the Hardy compound is in the middle of nowhere. Like, I have to have satellite internet, and it's like kind of shitty in the big scheme of things.
Yeah,
like there's just nothing comes out there. One day it will. One day I'll get good. Yeah. I'm tempted to fucking buy a tower myself.
I was going to say, or put like fiber optics.
I mean, like, I've heard people that are probably like, if you can, you buy a tire, then you can tower, you can sell the internet around you. I was like, fuck, I need to do something. This is so frustrating.
That's a great new scam.
Yeah.
Now you're an internet seller.
Yeah. I'm an internet slumlord.
That's true. Okay. So when you first go into those WWF, locker rooms, in awe of all those guys, and who's the cool guys around who are nice to you, who's like larger than life that you can't believe you're around. Kind of take us back to like what the year was and what the era was, I guess.
I remember one of the first times we went, if maybe not even the first, was right after the Shawn Razor ladder match. The first one, WrestleMania 10. And that was huge on us. That was very impactful. Like, we were like, oh my God, this is the greatest. Like, wrestling is peaked. It will never get better. And just going in as extras, you know, with like 13, 14 other guys that Stan had, and seeing those guys like back there interacting, da 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 da. It was such an incredible confirmation that wrestling really is a work, even here. It's just like we do. You know what I mean? As crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
But like, you don't know until you're there and you experience it, right? It was just such a confirmation. Well, look, they are buddies, and it's their closest buddies. We're right. We're right. And everything we thought, it is just like we thought.
Yeah.
You know? And we had the very first night, I wrestled on a live television show against Nikolai Volkov, who could barely speak. And like they said, whatever you guys do, don't mess up. Because if you mess up, you'll never come back again. And Nikolai said, oh, he said, it'd be better easy. I just talk. I mess up every match. No big deal. I remember he told me, I'm like, ah! You know, I'm like 18 years old.
Yeah.
Jeff was 16. And one of Stallion's guys got pulled out because he didn't want to take Razor's finish. He was scared about it. And they put Jeff in because they said, oh, this guy's a real good bumper, old brother, da da da. And I remember Jeff went first. He was 16, had hell of shit, little kid, other than Scott Hall. And Scott was frustrated that this other guy pulled out of his match, and he got in there with Jeff real quick.
What did the other guy said? Just, I'm not going to do it?
The other guy said, I can't take that finish. I had that finish. It's going to hurt me.
Was he ever invited back?
Why are you there? No, I don't think he did.
Right.
No.
Okay.
And then like Scott Hall just like got frustrated. He was like really fucking roughhousing Jeff. And he did a thing where he jammed him into the pole upside down, like had him on his shoulder, almost like jamming his stomach, like Rick Steiner would do a lot. And Jeff's knee hit the post. And like he felt bad for him. And then like it came back. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I had a rough day and blah, 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 blah. And one thing that sounds weird, but like those click guys, like Kevin Nash and Kid and Scott Hall, especially those three, they were super nice to us the whole while when we were there. And they knew that we were there like to just try and work hard and like take bumps and make people look good. And the next night I wrestled Scott Hall when Jeff did the night before. And he did a thing. He said, oh, you know, maybe, you know, I'll like chop you, you know, I'll be moving the corner, chop me a couple times, and then I'll turn you around, chop you. And I lit him up, man. It was a couple good smacks. And I remember like when they came back, like Sean and Kevin Nash, they're like, ah, when he did. But it was cool. They were like super respectful of it. You know what I mean? It was like, after that first night, I was so nervous, and they were like kind of trying to loosen up a little bit. Because it was super, so much pressure there being so young and just coming and, you know, do this and shot me a couple times, but I laid those in pretty good.
Yeah. And then who are the older guys around there?
I mean, you know, the Taker and Brett.
Not even that old. Like, I was like, is Black Jack Lanza?
They were aged. I was just, yeah, Black Jack Lanza was an agent. Chief J Strongbow was kind of like, eventually Stallion left us because his guys were going to stop paying him to be trained because we always got booked to work matches and they wanted to have TV matches. So we had to go and we ended up connecting with Chief J Strongbow and he would book us directly.
Gotcha.
Tony Garea, Black Jack Lanza, Chief J Strongbow, Rene Goulet. Mm-hmm. That was like the producers at that time.
Yeah. So I guess one of the things I would say is that all these extras, you know, it got to a point like when I was maybe 5 or 6 years into wrestling, like you kind of like, it was special to be asked to be an extra.
Right.
And you kind of made it as an independent wrestler, maybe to a point that you were allowed, but that's not necessarily the point at that time. They were just collecting bodies, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, did you see it as a competition? Like almost like, fuck, this is easy to stand out. All these guys fucking suck.
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Very much so.
Okay.
And we took pride in that. And we knew like, it was just like, it was easy. Like, cause they were all like, the guys that didn't train. I mean, we were young and healthy and athletic. I was athletic at the time, you know. Yeah. Like, and it was just like, they were just like weekend warriors that would wrestle, but you know, drink beer all week and had big beer bellies and not in shape.
And you could see, like, oh, this is how we're going to stand out and get our job, maybe?
For sure.
Okay. And did you make friends with other guys who were like-minded?
Yeah, like one of the first was Scotty Tuati, like because he was up there doing. I mean, one time there was a big snow and a show got canceled. We met him and hung out with him, and there were a few guys like that we interacted with, and it's funny. It really, I carried that experience with me because like I would feel like whenever I would interact with guys who were there booked to be extras or enhancement or work with them, I would try and like go out of my way to be good because they're just everybody trying to fight for a chance because like there were so many guys back then and we were okay because people liked us, but they would treat a lot of guys like trash too, you know?
Well, I mean, we had a match on Velocity.
It was good. It was good.
You were right? Nothing but, you were so nice to me.
Yeah. I see it pops up on YouTube once in a while.
It pops up every now and then. Yeah. I think it's the match that Josh Matthews says he doesn't like me. And then we later made up. I'm making it about myself, sorry. So you were making money. I guess I'm a little interested about being a poor kid and then making some money.
Yeah.
Independently, I guess you were kind of making money, and so like it didn't hurt that much, or I guess take me through the steps of like kind of making some independent money and then making a lot of money, I guess.
Yeah, well, I feel like we never, I mean, we still had, even when we were doing indies and being booked a lot, and I decided to drop out of college and was no longer going to be a civil engineer and build bridges, I still did Pine Straw. I taught myself how to sew, and I was making our gear, and I was also making other people's gear, so that was also a little revenue I had coming in. And then, like, I would still try and promote Omega shows, and, like, we'd try and sell enough sponsorships to, like, pay for the show so we could make a little bit of profit. Whenever we go and like go to someplace like a Baltimore or New York, usually by the time we were back and paid for food and gas, it was like break even at best, you know? So we really didn't make money like that. But like just upon signing those WWE deals and, you know, like that the first deal we were on was like $300 a week and $300 per appearance, I think, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we did that for a while. And then we saw it sign like the first real deal after we left that developmental. And then we started on TV, like, we did jobs, we signed, they wanted to utilize us. We'd start doing dark matches a lot more. And then, like, they signed us, and then we did a couple of those Funking Dojos, which was, like, the developmental system at that day. It was, like, a for 10 days, you'd go to Stanford and train, and then you'd spend 2 or 3 days doing indie shows, like, a two-week thing. And, like, just they would keep having guys do that every month until they thought they were ready. So we did two of those, both with Christian Cage. We both started on TV at the same time. And then after we started on TV, we, like, won a match, and then we won a match by countout. Then we probably did 6 or 7 more jobs, you know, and then we'd win a match and more jobs, you know, but it was still like a little momentum, but we still didn't change. Not like we came in like they had big plans for us, but still we signed a regular deal that was like still a developmental level deal, but not like a developmental, like per appearance per week thing. And we did 75,000, 100,000, 125, 150 for 5 years. And so we're like, oh my God.
That's game changing, right?
That's the game changer.
Right.
Game changer.
Even now, that would be amazing. Like for some people, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
But then, like, I mean, even going back in like 99, whenever they put us with Michael Hayes and they started utilizing us, you know, our downside was 75,000, you know, but like we made over, you know, like 150,000 that year or whatever, almost doubled. It's like, oh my God, this is really good. Now that we're on TV and we're on house shows all the time and we're super excited. In 2000, like we made $1 million, you know, which is, that's when the Hardy Boys caught on fire. And it's like, and you think about that, like your downside 75,000, that's 12, 13 times more than your downside is, you know? So like we were doing well, and like we sold, they quoted us, they told us at that time, and I can't imagine it's been broken by now because business was so hot then, that we sold more merchandise than any other tag team in the history of the industry that year.
That's cool.
You know, so we did really good. I mean, to get a royalty check that says $140,000 when you come up being broke as fuck, it's like, oh, what is this? Like, you feel nervous. Like, I don't want to lose it or tear it or spill water on it. Is it not going to be good? You know, like.
And it's even weirder when it's kind of weird when it's in your bank account and you're looking at the,
so
right?
Weird. Yeah, so weird. But I mean, then like, that just changed. Like, you know, then Jeff, as soon as we signed that regular deal, Jeff's like, fuck this. We didn't have money. He's like, I'm fucking. I was like, I'm going to save up, make sure I have enough money to pay for my house and I'm good. And blah, blah. He's like, no, I'm just getting a fucking trailer. And he just got out of the house because we, like, you know, it was just our dad and we could be downstairs and we had plenty of room. So it was kind of like we can go and come. And we were never at home to then.
Wait, so he started making a lot of money. So he's like, I'm going to buy a trailer.
Before we made like a lot of money.
Yeah.
But as soon as we started making any money.
Yeah.
He said he got like a double wide, like a modular home type deal, okay, which is more or less like a big, nicer trailer, right? That was the first thing he got.
What was the dumbest thing you ever bought?
The dumbest thing I ever bought? God.
A painting of you.
I was pretty good. I was pretty good with that. Never buying dumb stuff. I mean, like, sometimes looking back in hindsight, like, I thought at first that the building that is behind my house now, I have a 6,000 square foot building, which is called the Dome of Deletion, which came into storylines, which is literally a steel building. And I just wanted to build that, like have a place and maybe put like a huge gym in it and like have a ring in it. I felt like, well, I'm a wrestler and I love this shit. Like I should have a ring and maybe I'll train people here one day or whatever. You know, and that was like a big investment at the time, but I was still like making money doing stuff.
You had someone built that.
Yeah, someone built that. I mean, even my house. I mean, when I first went in to build my house, I built like a pretty big house. Mm-hmm. But I made sure that I had enough money and I paid cash for it all the way. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because I always worried like this could end at any time.
Right.
So I've been pretty conscious about that as far as like, you know, I don't know like when I'm going to stop making this money. So I don't want to like overspend because I hear all these horror stories from the past.
Yeah. What was the big start? What was it? Was it when Michael Hayes went with you?
Yeah, I mean, well, that was the start. They were finally dedicated to like doing stuff with us, and then Michael was with us, and he like we changed our gear, and just like that gear was a big game changer. Just wearing the kickwear pants and the tight shirts, and I just feel like a lot of people really related to us because we seem like wrestlers, especially in WWE, for the longest time were like these larger than life monsters. We were like relatable, and I feel like.
And I was gonna say like Greg Valentine's like old, like not old men, but like big thick men.
Yeah, right? And I feel like younger kids, boys and girls, like look at us like, oh well, if they weren't wrestlers, I'd probably be friends with them. You know, they could identify. I feel like, you know, we were an attainable person in some capacities, and then like that got us some credibility. We beat the APA for the tag titles, and they beat the shit out of us for fucking 6 weeks. Like, I was like, please just have these belts back. Yeah. We're done. Like, just stop hurting us. And then like the big thing that really got us hot was that Terry Invitational tournament, which ended with the double ladder match. And that was like really where it started, you know, like as far as like, and then we became like these cool kids that people really tried to emulate, you know, and like that was a big deal. And then like even as time went on and we got over with that, just like changing, there was a part of it where some guys turned against us, I think, because like, oh, all the girls love these guys. Mainly Jeff, but you know, the girls love these guys. And then when they put Lita with us, I think that was beneficial too, because those guys kind of like, oh, okay, well, we'll come check them back out. It was a good pairing.
Did they ever pitch you guys weird gimmicks, or did you guys have some good?
No.
Not nothing, huh?
No, no.
Like they, the spiders they did, or whatever?
They just know, you know, right? No. I mean, you had say in what you did back then. It was a different day. I mean, WWE is a 180 degrees different now.
Yeah, but sometimes there's those old things that pop up of like the weird sketches of, you know, like the Max Moons of the world.
There was that real weird time. I remember I was watching as a fan and I didn't know anything about wrestling, but like when they had the, what was the hockey player, the pug?
The Goon. T.L. Hopper. Yeah,
T.L. Hopper, like yeah. Freddie Joe Floyd. They did a lot of real weird games. I was like, what is all this? Like, yeah. These crazy hair, you know, but then like once it changed and it was the Attitude Era and it was very much like, oh, this is working. These guys are doing like these real characters, but turned all the way up like Steve. And they just kind of, you know, they want us to change our gear. Michael Hayes originally was like, oh, maybe we should go get some tight jeans and cowboy boots. And, you know, we're the next coming to the Freebirds. And if said, you know, well, maybe we could just like update it a little bit, maybe right. Modernize it.
Your That's dad, cool with you. Wear this tight shirt, would you?
Yeah, right. And then we went and bought our outfits and we thought he was going to wear whatever Freebird stuff. And he's like, y'all got my size. He put it right on, man.
It's not your size, but you can still wear it.
Yeah, hike those pants up.
So one thing about you that's always been great is that you, I feel it's, and what's interesting is that you said that you didn't have the internet until the last year, but you've always been on the cusp of, I think like being in touch with the fans and like, that kind of, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, right? Like I'd imagine you pride yourself on kind of just being up to date of like how to stay in touch or how to, what would you even say, cultivate your own fans, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've always tried to like be on the pulse of what's current.
Right.
Because things change, and especially it was like super obvious like through the late 90s how quickly times changed, you know? So I really tried to pride myself on like seeing like where things are going and trying to get there ahead of other people. You know, I guess is what I'm saying. And two, like, even like with the broken stuff, I mean, I feel like we got to the point where like, you know, you hear like, I don't know if you ever listen to Jim Cornette's podcast or any of his stuff now.
I do not.
I'm sure you don't, but like, this is so funny. Like, I know he talked about us one time and he really liked Jeff and I a lot. He was one of the reasons Jeff and I, he helped push for us to get hired in WWE. He was doing commentary and he liked us. And we worked for him in Smoky Mountain. Mm-hmm. And then after I like kind of like lost my way and just kind of like mentally, physically broke down everything 2011 and took some time off and got my shit together. When I first came back to ROH, that was him. He was the one who brought me there. You know, so it's like I've always got along good with him. When I was first doing the Broken Matt stuff, I know he went on record several times saying, well, I'd never watched it. I like them too much. And, you know, I don't want to get mad if I watch it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And not many people were watching TNA at that time anyway, you know, like, but long story short, it's like, I mean, I was seeing then too, like, he's such an advocate for like, you know, the business has to be old school like it was. We have to treat it with respect and just that's dying.
Yeah.
If you just, if business just ran like that now, because the cat's out of the bag and everybody knows that it's watching how this stuff works. It's just, it wouldn't die. And I feel like television ratings in a lot of way prove that, you know, like business has to like change in a way and grow and evolve to where like there's casual fans that find something that seems interesting in it, whatever it may be.
But what was I swear like you guys had like a fan, like the Hardy Show fan club, right? Were you monetizing off of that stuff?
Yeah, the Hardy Show was that. Well, I started that when I got released in 2004 and it's just like, okay, well, I'll start doing this other stuff. And I was super hot at that time. And like, we had the Hardy Show for the longest time. We had a pay site and you would go in and there was content almost, you know, it was like a network, you know, you'd go in, you would pay a monthly subscription, and I had a guy that would come down from Jersey and they'd film content. We'd do episodes with Jeff and I.
Yeah, it was before its time a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it good money?
DVDs. Yeah, we did great like for the first for the first couple of years. I went back to WWE and still kind of did on the DL right. A little bit, but I couldn't promote it really as much, you know, as I could then. We couldn't make it like, and we had to be very careful about our content because like I didn't want to like poke the bear.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously I'm not looking to get into anything, but I am curious that you say you never drank or whatever until the wrestling business kind of, like in retrospect, do you look back at how and why it got to where it got in 2011? I guess I'm, kind of curious.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it.
Does it start with my body hurts, I should start taking a pill, or?
Well, it started with, like, I mean, if you look back, you know, starting in 92 and then like working with WWE since 98 full time, right? 2009-ish, 2008-ish, 2009-ish. I'm to the point, like, you know, where one morning I wake up and I can't get out of bed, you know, and I did those leg drops off the top.
Yeah.
That was like, we first started a schedule, was like 10 nights on, 4 nights off. You know, it was the harder ring even in the beginning before they, you know, softened it up for like people that were like bumpers. But, you know, just doing that leg drop every night, just like my lower back was so beat up, is it's pretty apparent now still, but like, I couldn't get out of bed and just like crawled to the bathtub, and it was like became a big issue. And like, I'm still like a super clean guy, you know, like at this point, maybe guys had persuaded me to have a drink here and there, but not any kind of like issue or problem. Mm-hmm. Right. So then we end up going to TV, and I remember asking Johnny, like, hey man, I think I need some time off. Like, I'm having problems getting out of bed, and like sometimes I have to crawl to the bathtub and like can't do this. He said, well, let's go to the doctor and let's, you know, see what he can do to help you. And well, can I get like a little bit of time off trying to heal up? Well, we just really need you on the road, and like you can help these big guys. And I'm wrestling guys like Nathan, what was that brother's name? The big
Nathan Jones.
Oh, you know, like, I don't, you know, I was like a guy like that. They trusted to go out and work with these guys, big green guys, like to like take care of them, not take advantage of them, and whatever. So, you know, we really need to do that and keep you out here and keep you working. You know, let's see what your doctor said. And basically, a doctor said, "Well, I can give you a prescription. This will help loosen it up. It's called Soma. You know, and this is for pain. This is Vicodin or whatever." And then like, you know, once that starts, and it's like it changes, especially if you've never done it before, and it's like, oh shit, you know, this is like, you feel different in a lot, but it's like very much like a temporary fix. But then you don't realize how slippery of a slope it is. And then like, once the stress of the job, especially there with their system, gets you on you, then you get to the point where you're like, well, fuck it, man, I don't want to be stressed like this. You know, and it's just kind of like a natural growth as far as that goes, if you ever go down that way. And then like, once you get so far into it, it's like you just need, you almost like, you know, you just crave to have that feeling of just like where you don't feel anything or different. And part of that probably was like, as I'd said that earlier about our mother was the one that was like very loving. Like I never, you know, I never experienced that growing up. And there's like, I feel like that was one of Jeff's issues. Like later on, Jeff always like had some sort of addiction. He had to like be filling a void inside of him. And I think part of that was just like never having like someone that was like super nurturing and loving. And that's why I go out of my way to do it with my kids now, you know? And I realized that after getting my shit together and going through rehab. And even like my wife, she came from a home that was like very, her father was very loving towards her and everything else, and very different. And just even having to interact with her and be like emotional, she like really drags that out of me, because she's very emotional. Like when it's great, it's amazing. When it's bad, ooh, she's tough, you know? Right. But like,
I've seen her Twitter.
Yeah. you know the deal. I really feel like that's kind of where we got to. Just like the frustrations of the job, and like I'm hurt and I'm in pain, and it's just like, this just kind of makes it all go away, you know? But it's just like, you're not really addressing the issues that needs to be addressed. And that's where a lot of addiction issues start, I think. It's kind of like, you're just like, well, I don't want to deal with this issue head on, but you kind of just have to like man up and deal with the shit.
Well, what about the process of, like, is there any wants, or do you feel that? Do you feel those urges now, or is it just like, you know, it's
out of your life? No, I'm in control of every aspect of my life. And it's just, I mean, and now like, I can't even imagine having kids thinking about that, because I need to be here. I wish I could live here forever, live on this planet forever, just to take care of these kids, because they need me. Like, they're more important. Like, if it came down to something, if someone had like a gun and it's me and my three children, and they're like, okay, one of you have to die. I'm like, okay, it's me. I guarantee you, it's me. Take me. You know, they just mean they're more important than anything else to you.
And that was just going, like, when you were in rehab, did you realize, did it click of like, I need to, or you found, you, did they give you the tools?
I mean,
to straighten it up, you know what I'm saying?
It's a very humbling experience, especially if you've been like a star for a long time. Even with my brother, like, you know, the interaction I've had with him recently, he just went through rehab, which has been, I was like, to him is he's still almost like he's used to being the rock star. Nobody really tells me what to do. And I think he's like kind of uncomfortable. He's trying to like figure out who he is now. He's in a great place, you know, but it's just different because he's, you know, done whatever in the fuck he wants to for 20 years, right. You know? So it's like, it's different, but it's good. And he needs to be healthy. And I mean, that's, I just want him to be healthy and he'll find happiness with that. He's got two beautiful girls too, you know? So yeah. It's just, he needs to be around for a long time.
And that's, you're in your, what are you, 44?
45.
Okay. So like 50 years old, you still want to, and then, did we talk about this on air? I forget. Oh, maybe not. If there was like a different job for you somewhere else, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I love this place, man. And yeah. I love like the approach and just the, like the positive energy that's here, you know, like with, just from Tony all the way down. It's just so weird. It just seems like this place shouldn't be real.
Were the Young Bucks like, meeting them and interacting and wrestling with them, did it like, I feel like it changed your guys' life a little bit, or your life at least a little, or like a weird like new perspective that you maybe didn't think you would have in wrestling, that these guys would come into your life?
In which way?
I just felt like... The way that we all did, I feel, in the way that, like, you know WWE. I know you've hustled so well on the independents and stuff, but it's just, like, to see how... I don't know. I felt like when you were doing matches with them, it felt like it was really exciting for you. This is from an outsider's perspective, being in the locker room.
Like, before we went back to WWE.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And even while you're in WWE, you, like, you still say to yourself, these guys are starting this thing, and we know what they're all about and what they represent, and there's that young... Basically, they're like the young yous, you know? I don't know. I just, you know, it's every couple of years, whatever, we meet someone in wrestling that, you know, we didn't, it's almost like a gift, I feel like.
It is.
And I'm putting it into your words, it might, or in your mouth, it might not even be true.
No, but. I think we've always had like a very kindred bond with them.
Right, that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm much more the business guy. Jeff was like the, you know, JR would say all the time, like, well, you know, Jeff's the sizzle, Matt's the steak. You know, like Jeff was the fucking rock star, man. Like, just has the undeniable it charisma. You know, and I was more like the business guy, and I was like the meat and potatoes of stuff. But like, even knowing that the Bucks kind of, when they saw the Hardys have that first tag team ladder match, and we got hot, and we were doing all that cool stuff, and we were like the hottest tag team on the planet, from a merchandise, you know, I know they were like, oh man, these guys are cool and we don't want to do this. And then even meeting them at TNA and the first time.
Oh, you met them there first, huh?
When I went, yeah.
I didn't know that.
And, you know, just great quality dudes too, you know, and just like, we always like bonded with them because I mean, it's probably something to do with them being legit brothers. Like mm-hmm. we're legit brothers, mm-hmm. you know, so we always had a good relationship. And even like during that Ring of Honor, before we went back to WWE, we had talked Impact and Ring of Honor into working an angle with us and the Bucks that was going to go across companies, you know. And then Jeff Jarrett had just came in, and Jeff Jarrett, speaking of addiction, was in a bad place at that time when he was at Impact and kind of like was messing around with the deals that Jeff and I were going to do. And that's why we ended up like eventually leaving and talked. Triple H had contacted us and they offered us a great deal to come back. And kind of at that point, I was like, well, I don't know how many years I have left, but maybe it's meant to be. You know, we'll go back here and we'll see if they'll take care of us. But I also knew I was rolling the dice from a passion and creative standpoint, because I know like being outside, I'm kind of my own boss, or I control my destiny to a degree. You know, there, I just had been in the system so long. I know that they're going to have the last word. I mean, we'll make good money, but is that going to also translate to my happiness when money isn't the big issue now? It's not like I'm struggling money-wise. So it was very cool once I saw all Elite stuff was going down, and I knew Matt and Nick were involved in it, and like we'd always had close ties, and just I feel like us there was a natural fit in many ways too.
Yeah.
And I spoke to them. I met them when we were in Ontario, California at a Fridays. And I said, man, I'm going to be in touch. Like, you know, I've got 9 months left on my deal, 8 or 9 months. I said, you know, like, I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. Like, in a perfect world, I probably would stay here and retire here and do my last few years. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to end up being, but I'm going to be watching you guys closely as you guys move forward. And then it just kind of became a thing with WWE, I think, where they just, Vince I don't have anything but good things to say about Vince in the big scheme of things, because like I wouldn't have the life and I wouldn't be who I am right now if it wasn't for him and his company. But like, I just think in his mind, he did appreciate my mind and my creativity, and he saw me in the role like as being a producer, kind of aged out a producer, or give creative input or be on his team, whatever it may be. And then like once that was that and he didn't see me as a wrestler anymore, I was kind of like in my mind like, well, I still want to finish this out. Like, I'm very passionate about this and I love it. And I wanted these twilight years, I want to get the most I can out of them and really enjoy it, you know? So that's kind of how it was. Even when they offered a lot of big money to stay there, I was like, but I know how you see me in your mind. So it's not going to happen. You know, a lot of guys get fooled by that, right? You know, oh, we're going to give you this big money, brother. If that's what you want, there's a big push. If it's in their mind, what they see you as, that's what you're going
to
be.
Yeah. And you can be you can now be the Razor Ramon to somebody else's little Hardy brother, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I mean, but too, and on top of that, I mean, something like, I don't want to come here. It's like, I don't want to be the champion. I don't want to be the centerpiece and build the show around me. I just, like, I want to do something I enjoy. I want to contribute to the show. And I do, like, this whole thing that we did with Private Party was carried them off. Like, they said, like, oh, my God, we'd love to do something with Matt and, like mentor them and maybe do something with Sammy. And it's almost like kind of like a real thing. Like, I love to give back. I enjoy that. I take pride in that.
That's cool, man.
So
that's it.
That's that.
That's it. This is great. That was a great talk.
Yeah, good talk for sure.
You know what you're doing, though.
Flew by.
Did you ever think about doing a podcast?
I have. Yeah. And even, like, especially, like, upon leaving this last time and doing this and having so much freedom, I mean, it's definitely crossed my mind.
I just felt like I was thinking back of you doing internet stuff and whatever.
Yeah.
I've been if you're in a different world, like, you know, like, I kind of was, you know, I figured out the podcasting world a little before everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you were a pioneer. You were the pioneer.
Yeah, I feel like you probably, like, you know, you were one of those people who would, like, figure it out with me, like, right, if we were, you know, right, in different positions. Cool, that's it. This was a great talk.
Yeah, it was a great talk. A lot of fun, man.
Thanks, bud.
Very good. And we actually, I feel like we covered some territory I really haven't delved into before, so.
That's the goal.
You know how to pull it out of
people. I know how to do it. All right, thanks, bud.
Thank you.
All right, Matt Hardy is on Twitter and Instagram at Matt Hardy Brand. You could also book him on Cameo. I have heard him in the hallways of that very Hyatt doing cameos outside of his hotel room. He is very fun and he is very invested in sending you a message on Cameo. Also, Matt is starting a brand new YouTube show next week. So go subscribe to Matt's YouTube channel, YouTube/Matt Hardy Brand. That was the talk. I love doing these. They're so much fun. Matt is the perfect first guest to have. He is the perfect guest for the Art of Wrestling. Easy, free-flowing conversation. Great to have him on. Glad he's doing well. And glad you're doing well listening to this podcast. Before we go, we do have some plugs and upcoming events. All right, all the past archives are ad-free at patreon.com/Colt Cabana. For a dollar more, you can also get full Instagram Live call-in shows, never-before-seen Colt Cabana content, Let's Watch Wrestling, Art of Wrestling live videos, and so much more. Grab some merch at coltmerch.com or digitalcolt.com. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitch are all at Colt Cabana. coltwrestling@gmail.com is my very public email. That's where you can hit me up for shows, conventions, or any business and non-business stuff, or send me something fun to my P.O. box, which can be found at the bottom of my website, coltcabana.com. Upcoming, safe tickets are being sold at all AEW events in Jacksonville, Florida, if you would like to come. AllEliteWrestling.com for that information. And actually, this Saturday, I will be close to Anchorage, Alaska for WrestlePro. Tickets and information are available at Facebook/WrestlePro Alaska. That is probably one of the only indie shows I will be doing, I think. Maybe if there's something safe around the Midwest I could drive to, but I will be heading to Alaska. Intro music is by the Ukulele Teacher on YouTube. Outro music by Super Fun. Yeah, yeah, Rocket Ship. Podcast cover art designed by Jimmy Lee. Photo by James Musselwhite. Thank you to our sponsors, EatRight.life, BlueChew.com, SheathUnderwear.com, and of course, OneHourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. That's where you can buy all my shirts, ProWrestlingTees.com/ColtCabana. I would also like to thank my Patreons at the $10 tier. Hold the Line Harry, Lee, Brian, Joseph, Jocelyn, Maureen, Aaron, Molly, Stacy, Kim, Ernie, Jeremy, Johnny, Adam, Amanda, Jim, Caleb, Tristan, Josh, Tabitha, Jay, Ishmael, Tam, Seth, Stephen, Jesse, Mary Kate, James, Matt, Samuel, Michael, Fred, Nash, Gut Pocket, Davey, Steven, Vicken, Anthony, Nick, Arlen, Dean, David, Joey, Jimmy James, Tom, David, Jeff, John, Cody, Nicholas, Chris, Nigel, Adam, Tom, Claire, Sammy, Robert, Juan, The Ska Man, Ed, Justin, Rudy, Joe, Caleb, Maria, Aaron, Victor, Christine, Murat, and Scott. I love that you can get a little mini shout out if you subscribe to the Patreon at the $10 tier. Also at the $10 tier, you get a collectible photo art cover of the Art of Wrestling pin. And here I'm showing the people on the camera the Young Bucks pin. That is this week's. They will never be ordered again. They are a collector's item. Get them all. Patreon.com/ColtCabana. That is the show for this week. That is one down. We will see you in 2 weeks. Tell a friend. Subscribe. Let the world know. This has been the Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.